When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I certainly hope this little incident hasn't put you off flying, miss. Statistically speaking, of course, it's still the safest way to travel.
Let's go. But inconspicuously. Through the window.
And here we go.
What is up, everyone? Welcome to DC Standum, your guided tour of the DC Multiverse. I'm your host, Mike Cicchini, the editor-in-chief of DennyGeek.com. And each week, I'm bringing you discussions with writers, artists, actors, and experts, covering everything from DC Comics to the movies and TV that make up the DCU. This week, we have an in-depth conversation with Jeremy Adams, writer of DC's brand new Green Lantern title, and who is currently bringing to a close an epic run on Wally West with The Flash, and who has another Flash-centric title on the horizon in October with a book focused on Jay Garrick. As we record this, it is actually Green Lantern number one release date, is it not?
I know, it's crazy. A lot of fear-based emotions going on here.
Were there fear-based emotions when you were first offered, as high-profile a character as Hal Jordan, just as you were wrapping up a massive Flash run?
Yeah, it was a combination of sorrow and excitement, you know, and I'm one of those people, I get kind of myopic. And I remember being like, oh, I'm so sad and kind of down on myself. And then we were driving to my in-laws, which is like 3 hours away or something. And I got in the car. I talked to Jeff Johns, who was just like, this is awesome. I'm on the Jeff Johns track for some reason. I don't know what's going on, but he was super pumped. And by the time I got to my in-laws, I kind of figured out what I wanted to do, what the story was I wanted to tell. And then I started getting really excited about it.
Let's talk about that story. And it's funny that you mentioned Jeff Johns, because Jeff, to me, was the writer who really just foregrounded the outer space elements of Green Lantern, like more than they ever had been, you know, in my lifetime when I was reading the book. But now with your book, It's an Earthbound setting, at least at the start. It feels to me a little bit more like kind of like that post-crisis, early 90s Green Lantern run, which is where I really kind of first fell in love with the character. So why don't you tell me about, you know, placing Hal back on Earth and everything that comes along with that?
Paul Kaminsky, who's my editor, said that they really wanted to get to kind of a back to the basics, you know, Hal on Earth idea. And I had a pitch, a while ago that it fit perfectly. It was kind of a thought I had in my head, and I kind of built it out, because just him being on Earth is not a story in itself. So it's like, why is he on Earth? How does he stay on? Because I'm like you. I think the temptation I have, because I grew up reading, you know, Jeff Johns' Green Lantern and Tomasi's like Green Lantern Corps, like that 1-2 punch that was just out, and it was every month. Was just like, this is awesome. This is Star Wars and Star Trek combined, and it was incredible. And I think the temptation for me, at least, would be, it's great here. I gotta go, you know. And that would just be my temptation. So putting some constraints on that and how that actually relates to a story became really fun, and it also forced me to focus a little more on Hal's character and what Hal's doing. And I remember the first thought I had was, I wonder how much Hal has in his bank account. Like, that was the first thought. Like, he's been gone for so much. What does he have, $13 in his bank account? What's going on? And that kind of helped me think about what it's like to just come home again. What it's like to come, you know, he's been leading and patrolling and, you know, fighting cosmic forces for a long time. And the mundane of Earth, or at least, you know, I think presupposed mundane, it's got to be hard. And the woman that he really loves, that's been on and off again because of the tumultuous nature of his occupation is moving on. And he has to struggle with, like, I like her. I'm kind of pursuing her, but at the same time, is it right for me to do so? You know, is it right for me to put her in this situation, into a relationship that's as volatile as it is? So those are some of the kind of character questions I want to move forward in the book. But anytime you take on one of these characters, at least this is like my second time really being able to touch one of the bigger characters. And I think there's a tremendous amount of pressure. I mean, I'm excited about it, but oh, I am very well aware of the pressure that's involved.
I feel like there's a certain natural synergy, is not the right word. I'm a writer. I should know words, and I'm not knowing them very well right now. But there's a certain, I don't know, almost like a parallel track with Flash and Green Lantern. I feel like those characters, for as different as they are, and they each come with so much mythology and can just completely populate an entire superhero universe into themselves, right?
Yeah.
But there is something that has always made those two characters fit well together. And it's not just the color schemes, but like, and I can't put my finger on it, but for some reason, it makes you going from Flash to Green Lantern feel like a natural thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's any way you can elaborate on this connection, or if I'm just imagining it.
No. I think they're kind of everymen in a way. It's not like, you know, their trauma and their road to superherodom didn't start early age, like Wonder Woman, Batman, or Superman. Like, they've always had, you know, kind of, well, at least with Batman, his like determination to become this thing happened very early. And Superman obviously was born with it. And then Wonder Woman was born with it. There's this kind of element of like, they're born into this godhood in a way, right? Whereas Hal Jordan and Barry or Wally, that came later. You know, that they had somewhat traditional, I mean, you know, upbringings. You know, I know that Hal had the trauma of his father's death, but, you know, that's everyday life. He didn't get the chance to become the Green Lantern until much, much later. So I don't know. I always feel like there's a relatability. There's a certain amount of humanity to them that some often is overlooked or not necessarily touched upon with Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. Not to say they don't have humanity. It's just they have to deal with all these other things around them. So there's a little bit of like, oh, they're just dudes, you know? Even if Barry is, you know, a scientist and, you know, works for the police department, he's still a dude. He doesn't have $1 billion in the bank. He's not bulletproof, you know, all that stuff. I think that's that nature versus nurture argument. But that's why I feel like there is some sort of relatability. What you're picking up on is something that I've thought about, is that Hal is this kind of overconfident schlub in a way, but he does have this amazing heart and he's very self-confident, but there are certain things in his life that, you know, for such a self-confident person, I think looking around and seeing the world moving on without him is a blow to his ego in a lot of ways. You know, he was back in the day being a hotshot test pilot, all that stuff. It's great, you know, but as you see in issue number one, the world's moved on a bit. Like, that's almost like being like, I was the best buggy driver that ever existed. And people are like, buggy driver? No one uses buggies. You know?
This issue has, you know, a lot of Hal and it has a lot of Carol. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's no Guardians. They're only kind of referred to, obviously. Right. The Manhunters are, you know, kind of there in spirit with, mm-hmm. you know, with the antagonist who's briefly introduced in this issue.
Right.
You know, it seems like there is like a very, even the way Hal confronts that guy is very kind of direct and, you know, non-powered and, you know, at least initially. So, you know, what is your mission here? Like, how far back do you want to strip Green Lantern back to the essential qualities of Hal mm-hmm. before you start bringing back other elements of Green Lantern mythology? And I'm sorry if that comes off like a loaded question. It's not my intention.
No. I mean, listen, the reality is, even when I was dealing with the Flash, the amount of mythology and massive continuity and all that stuff that existed in the Flash was a lot. And, you know, I think Green Lantern might be a little more complicated in some ways, but my belief is, in order for the reader to come along for all that mythology, that potentially will come, and I say potentially, is they've got to care about the character. And I saw this very, you know, there's a lot of Green Lanterns. There's a lot of Green Lanterns 2814. And for some reason, people really started hating Hal. And I always felt like it was my mission statement to be like, I want you guys to like this guy. I want you to like him so much that when we start introducing pieces of that mythology back in, you care. Because without caring about him, no one's going to care about the mythology. You can do it all. You're blue in your face. It's not going to matter, at least to me. And I think the mythology is grand. And I also think that at the end of Jeff Thorne's run, there's a lot of loose threads that as a writer are great jumping off points to create other stories. And he was doing this like dynamic, high sci-fi, you know, epic thing. And I am definitely doing a little more grounded, but also with a lot of mystery that's going to just be peeled back over and over, and hopefully not like an onion so you're crying at the end. But I mean, just that we start uncovering things, because, you know, I've seen people talking today. It's like, oh, how did, you know, how is his ring charged? It's like, that's a good question that we're going to explore. You know, how, you know, what, where are the guardians? Well, I don't know. I have ideas. You know, there's a lot of loose threads. And what's great about it is talking with like Philip, who's doing the backup issue that's going to lead into his John Stewart. He's got some amazingly dynamic ideas. And hopefully we both want to weave into each other on and off as we go forward. But right now it's about Hal on Earth and the consequences of quarantining 2814 and Hal there separated from who were ostensibly his family. And just on a smaller level is just like, you want what you can't have in a way too. And it's like, yeah, he's Green Lantern and he's getting back in the groove. I'm excited about being able to use Hal in a way that he gets to interact with heroes, because I don't know the last time, other than like the big, like, okay, Dark Crisis, here they are, but they're usually surrounded by other Green Lanterns. But like, I want to see him have a conversation with Ollie. I want to see him have a conversation with Barry. I want him to have kind of these interactions with other heroes, because I'm a huge nerd. I want to play with the action figures, you know. It's like he's on Earth now, and it's just gonna, I think it's gonna be fun, it's gonna be interesting, and there's a lot of mystery involved. So hopefully people stick around long enough to kind of explore that, or interested enough to explore it.
Well, let's talk about playing with the action figures, because yeah. Your Flash run, you know, obviously it's a Wally run, and you know, you started off like with a very Wally centric story. Of course, yep. You know, Flash, there's, you know, there's so many speed units, speed, what did they call them? The biological conduits of the speed force, right?
Yeah.
There's so many of those around. It's inevitably going to become a Flash family book, right? But like, you really built to that. Like by the time we got to 1 Minute War, which was like a real crescendo, and like the, honestly, one of the best, like, big Flash family stories I've read in I don't know how long.
Thank you.
Do you see a similar track with Green Lantern, where, you know, a year or two down the road, there are more of the familiar, especially the 2814 Green Lanterns, all coming together in a big way? Or are you not even, you're just focused on making people?
I have a very long-term, unfortunately, because I'm weird like that, I have a very long-term plan, but, you know, who knows? You know, after issue one comes out and issue two craters and sales, I do have a really long-term goal to a bigger story, because I, you know, I definitely want to stay on Earth for a while, and I want to get us comfortable there, and I want to get us comfortable with Hal and hopefully guest stars and stuff. And then I want to start unraveling a lot of what's happening out there, because, and I think it'll be that much more meaningful. I remember, do you remember when, you know, in Marvel, when the Illuminati sent the Hulk away, and I remember thinking, that is the coolest thing. He's gone. He's off the board for a year. And I thought the same thing in Justice League International, when they like made Guy Gardner a pacifist for a long time. That sense of catharsis when we finally do open up the outer sphere, you know, is, I think, going to be really cool. If if everything I want to happen happens. I mean, and you know, regardless, it's like I'm super excited about these small moments and these character moments and stuff. And Zermanico is just killing it when it comes to that. Yes. Like he's doing it in a way that, I mean, I knew he would, because Flashpoint Beyond, every time he'd send back art, I was just like, oh my gosh, this guy's so good. But I can't wait to do some more bombastic things and more things that I hope that he gets excited about. Not that he's not excited. He seems to be. But I, you know, I want to push him too. I want to be like, oh, as I said, Zermanico is the ring. Like I get to create a construct by going like, I want it to be like this. And then he's like, you know, and he puts it out there. So I don't have to use that much willpower, which is great. But it's exciting to see him bring his ability. And if you watch that guy's art career, it's just how I got lucky for him to be on. I'll never know, but I'm very, very grateful. But yes, I want to move out. I want to start small and work big. I think it worked for The Flash. I think it's important as we do the dawn of DCU and that we're concentrating on one character. It's going to make those other characters mean so much when we bring them in and get to spend a little more time with them, instead of them just being a nameless face in the crowd, you know?
And, you know, if this is a little bit of a spoiler, forgive me, but is the goat okay for mission number one?
You know what? You'll see. I think, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I thought it was funny. I had written in there and then Zermanico set the pages and I like howled. And then I also felt kind of bad for the fictional goat. So you know,
well, yeah. I need confirmation that the goat is okay.
Goats. I mean, listen. If you ever watch one of those Earth documentaries, you'll see like a goat fall off a cliff, and then they get up and they're like, "What's up?" You know, like they're fine.
we have to move on to Flash in a minute, but I have one more GL question because it just goes back to something you said a couple minutes ago about people not liking Hal, you know. I wonder how much of that is because there have been definitive great Hal stories in the comics, you know, but there has never been a definitive Hal story in other media. Whereas with John, you know, like everybody loves John, not just from the comics, but because John was so amazing on, you know, Justice League Unlimited and things like that. I know it's not your fault and it's not really your it's not really your remit here, but I just wonder like how much of that is just a matter of kind of perception, you know, where Hal can be kind of elevated again to the point that the character who is, you know, I mean, look, that was the action figure guy when I was a kid, so
I mean whether it's an unreal perception or not, it's just a perception that is out there, you know? And it's something you have to contend with as a writer, because you're like, no, this is the superhero. This is a good guy. There's a reason the ring went to him. And it's not just that he has tons of willpower. And I think it's a very important piece of the puzzle to get people excited about this guy again. Again, he's, you know, he always comes in and it's like, oh, look, it's Hal Jordan, the greatest Green Lantern, but I need to know why I care about that Green Lantern. They did that really effectively with Kyle growing up. I was like, I get who this kid is.
Yes.
You know, he's a guy that does art and blah, blah, blah. I get it with Guy even. It's like, I hate him, but I love him, you know? And so my goal is just to remind people why you should care about Hal. Because, you know, originally when comics came out, it was very much like characters were just ciphers, right? They're square jawed, like, yes, I'm good at what I do, blah, blah, blah. And so as we gotten older, you know, and the industry gotten older, the craft's gotten older, we've wanted to get a little more nuance in the character of them. And I just think Hal's very fascinating because, again, he can be a hothead, but he's also saved the universe countless times. He's worked for God, for goodness sake. You know, like he has to have a bigger perspective at this point in a way. And I think when that bigger perspective juts up against your natural tendency to, you know, be a, you know, hard, stubborn and willful, that makes for interesting drama. So we'll see.
I also take back what I said about Hal not really being the best served in other media, because you know what? That Green Lantern animated series was way underrated.
See, come on now. You're right. was my first credit in television. And
oh, really?
Yep. And
I love that show.
It was such a fun show, and I got to do two of them, and it was fun. Jim Krieg, who's my mentor, was running that show along with Giancarlo and Ernie Altbacker. And I remember walking in the room, and I remember them having the characters pinned up, and over them, they had like Captain Kirk was over Hal, and I thought, oh, I get it. I get it now. I get who he is. That makes more sense. And they, you know, obviously they did a little derivation on him, but I get who he is in that moment. So I kind of want to pursue that. I love working on that series. And I think it is kind of the definitive Hal Jordan in my mind.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So scratch what I said before. What do I know?
Never mind.
But we should move on to a character that, you know, really looms large for me, you know, and that is Gold Beetle. Well, not really, but I do love Gold Beetle like so much, and I do want to talk about Gold Beetle. But you're about to finish up a substantial run with Wally West,
right?
And I've kind of been calling this in my head, it's like the Wally West apology tour, you know, where it's like Wally fans like me from you know, like 80s and 90s kids that like really grew up with Wally, kind of see Wally get. Wow, he's been kicked around a lot the last 15 years.
Right. He's the pinata. Yeah. Yeah. When they asked me to take it over, my through line was like, I told people at the beginning, you can look at everything I said at the beginning and go, as long as I'm riding him, he's going to be okay. and it was just because he had been beaten up a little bit. And I found a lot of joy in taking that off the table and being like, what fun superhero stories can I just tell with this guy? And then as it went along, it was like, oh yeah, but his wife is really important to this scenario. And his kids are really important to this scenario. And Kid Flash is important. Like, just kept adding as the years went by, and it just deepened who Wally was, who I think is the most well-adjusted character in the DC universe. and part of that is because, you know, as much as people say, oh, Jeremy retconned this stuff, it's like, maybe, but I also codified it as something that did happen and something that really took place and really hurt him emotionally and really was that trauma. And the idea of Wally being so hopeful that you can come out the other side, you just have to hold on. It's literally the first things I say in like the annual that I wrote, the first annual that I wrote, you know, you don't leave until the miracle happens. And when somebody, in my experience, life experiences, when I've met somebody that has gone through horrific circumstances and are still somehow able to stand upright and operate, they become heroic to me. And so it was a great opportunity to highlight the fact that Wally was able to overcome those things and have this amazing family and have this amazing extended family. And it was just, I mean, gosh, it was just such a thrill to be able to write him and write him for as long as I was able to.
And you followed, you know, you're following Josh Williamson on the book, who wrote one of the definitive Barry runs, as far as I'm concerned, you know, and you're joining a pantheon of like serious Wally writers, you know, from, I mean, you know, go back to Mike Barron and Bill Messner-Loebs and, you know, never mind like Mark Waid and Jeff Johns. And and I got to confess, I came late to your Flash run because after Joshua wrapped, and I was like, you know what? I have read nearly every Flash comic published in my lifetime. I've read enough Flash for a while. Like, I don't need this. And then people start telling me how good this Wally book is. So I dove in and it's fantastic. But I want to know, like, is there to you a fundamental, like, obviously character-wise, Wally and Barry are very different.
Yeah.
But is there like a difference to you between like a Barry story and a Wally story, or is that something that doesn't matter and it's just character that drives it?
No. Well, I don't know. I just think of Wally as much more emotional as and Barry's much more intellectual. I think Wally at this point has a much bigger perspective on the universe in a way. he's gone through some serious stuff, man. But that's just because I've been writing him that way too. It's like, I'm taking all the stuff and I say it in a couple monologues that Wally gives. It's like, he was on, you know, the Mobius chair. He has done all these cosmic things that people forget about. So he has kind of a bigger perspective. I think Barry can be isolated in intellectualism. And, as you see at the beginning of One Minute War, Iris is like, hey, listen, your sidekick's moved on. What's going on with us? So that was, I think he, but then when he's aware of it, I think he moves on it. But but Barry is very logical. But so it's not that the stories are different. It's just that the way the stories are different is because the characters approach the story differently, you know? So I can do whatever the MacGuffin is. Like if the scythe that like turns, you know, draws people bad that was containing Eclipso early on landed and it was Barry that found it, he wouldn't be cracking jokes like Wally would. He would probably be more along the lines of Mr. Terrific, like, we don't need to touch this, we need to make sure, you know. He would be much more direct, while Wally's just like, well, listen, you know, this is crazy, you know, stuff like that. So I don't know.
Oh, I do like, it's funny that you say, like, for as logical and controlled as Barry is, right? Barry's the one who has not settled down, or had not at that point.
Right.
Whereas, like, Wally
got a brood, man.
Yeah. Family Guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was one of the reasons I wanted to give him another kid, was mainly because the trope of having twins, you know, it's a trope. And I was like, usually superheroes stop at one or two. And I'm like, I don't know if any of them have three, you know? And it was just like, this is a little different dynamic. And the idea behind it was like, oh man, it'll be so funny to see Wally handle a baby, you know? Like, you know, that's hysterical. There's a lot of stories to be told there. So, yeah, Wally's awesome.
When are we getting more Gold Beetle?
Oh my gosh.
Because I love her.
I love her too. I love her too. Issue 799 comes out next week. And she'll be in that, because she was just in 798. And she is this thing that I've, you know, she was in my first run of comics I've ever did in the Shazam. That was how she was introduced in Shazam one, you know, DC 1 million Future State. And her story and her origin is something that I hope to dole out over many decades.
Really?
I just love that she is out of time, out of sync. She does such bizarro things, but she knows a lot. She is my version of, you know, Matt Smith and David Tennant smashed together, you know, in the DC universe. It's my firm belief that it is Gold Beetle that rectifies and fixes continuity whenever there's problems. Even if it's like an accidental coloring issue in a comic, I'm like, yeah, Gold Beetle fix that. Don't worry. You know?
I love too how you approached, I mean, like, it's interesting, like, at one point it's like, I think it's Barry who says that, like, we have weird continuity. I think that's the first time I've ever heard the word continuity used in story as a, you know what I mean? Without it being, like, obviously there's a meta element to it, but without it being, like, a looking at the reader and saying it kind of way. And you have a couple of moments like that, you know, where you're kind of acknowledging that, you know, that Morrisonian view of superhero storytelling, but without trying to, you know, without trying to like do a bit with it, I guess is the way to say it.
I think speedsters, like my belief is that speedsters, people connected to the Speed Force, are aware of continuity shifts. Even if it's like memories or dreams or whatever, they're aware that it's changed. And there's a mention of it that Mr. Terrific makes in Flashpoint Beyond to Miss Baxter. And it was like, and it's like, it's brief. It's like, yeah, we all know our memories have changed because of whatever. And so I think, especially some of them that are more connected, probably have a better idea. That's why you know, Jay Garrick in Dark, or one of the lead-ins to Dark Crisis, he sees Linda in the costume and he says, Judy. And it's like, he's having that moment, because there's no reason he should know who she is, because she has been taken out of time, if you are reading Stargirl. But he does recognize something there subconsciously. So, and I think with Barry, it's probably even greater because he remembered their relationship with Iris. And even when he touched Wally, when Wally returned from the Speed Force in Williamson's run, there was like an instant recollection. And I think the same thing, but I think Wally absolutely remembers things changing and absolutely remembers other versions of the universe.
Let's talk about Jay for a second, because you have a Jay Garrick book on the way in October. The book is called Jay Garrick, The Flash. It is out October 17th.
You know, Jeff Johns had this great new golden age idea that's going to wrap into the dawn of DCU. You know, you have Venditti's Sandman, you have Tim Sheridan's Alan Scott, you have my Jay Garrick that, you know, he came to me and he's like, hey, do you want to explore this new daughter, you know, that comes into Jay's life? And of course, like I said to you earlier, I'm the Mikey of, you know, comic books. So you want me to write something, I'm going to write it. And I have a daughter myself. So trying to get in the headspace of something of like, okay, we have another speedster. Why should we care? You know? But also I'm a dad, and the idea that I forgot about my daughter and then suddenly she shows up. Ooh, that's tough. That's tough to even like remotely think about. And leading to greater mysteries in that series that I think are going to have long-ranging effects in the DC universe, which is exciting because the other guys, you know, Robert and Tim's books all take place in the past. Mine takes place in the present with flashbacks. But, you know, it's going to be a great way to explore Jay Garrick and his wife, Joan, to a degree, who thought they never could have kids. And that was a defining feature of Jay Garrick that people really loved. And now that has been kind of changed because now you have a kid. But how do you do that? How do you, it's one thing to be a grandparent. You can wind up a kid and then send them back home. This is like, you know, this is your kid that you forgot about in a world that is not like the 1940s. You know, so there's going to be a lot of fun to be had, but there's also going to be some old villains that are going to see their chance to capitalize on things they had tried many, many years ago. So that'll be interesting too.
Your Jay in One Minute War.
Right.
He's a hard man, dude. Like that's a very different Jay than I think we've become accustomed to, but it makes sense. I mean, you know, he's kind of like greatest generation Jay, right?
Right.
What else can you, is there anything else that you could tell everybody about your approach to Jay Garrick? And like, this is a character, you know, who has to be so distinct from Wally and from Barry, and, you know, can't just be the kindly, you know, grandfatherly, you know, mentor Flash figure. So how did you come to this? I just love Jay in general, so I'm really hyped.
He is a very direct representation of my grandfather, my mom's side, who was in World War II and incredible hero, two purple hearts, like tons of, and I remember my grandfather, big, just hulking guy, didn't look like it. Because he was a farmer, and I remember him taking off his shirt and this giant scar from the back of his shoulder all the way down to his hip from shrapnel. And I was like, you know, what happened there? You know, and it's like, oh yeah, it was a bomb and I was in, you know, in the war and this happened. He didn't talk about it much, but what I found out is he had got the shrapnel, you know, recovered in the hospital for a couple of weeks and then immediately back to the front lines in a way. And I was like, oh my gosh, this guy is Rambo. And that's how I look at Jay. He's a very kindly, there's a lot of these guys out there, a lot of Vietnam vets and war vets that are, they're very kindly, they're very polite. They will give advice and stuff. And I think he recognizes they're in a different world. He's the guy that's like, okay, you know, we're going to punch bad guys and stuff like that. But like in One Minute War, it's like, well, this is war. So I'm going to use my tooth to kill this guy so I can, you know, not that he killed him, but, you know, he's not playing patty cake because he's been through this. This is a different set of circumstances. Jay is somebody who's been alive for a long time and seen a lot of change. And I think the way I'm approaching it is here's a guy that has seen a lot of change. And now he has a daughter that is from a more quote unquote innocent time. I think it's going to be really difficult for him And really, you know, you think about being a helicopter parent, now you add the Speed Force to that. And that's going to, you know, that's going to provide some both hilarity and also tension between their relationship.
All right. Well, we have hit the past, the present, and the future, the near future of your recent DC work. So thank you so much, Jeremy. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's always good talking to you.
And that is it for this week's DC Stand'em. Don't forget to check out our web home at dennygeek.com, where you can find all our DC coverage at dennygeek.com/DC. Drop us a line at DC Stand'em on Twitter and Instagram. Give those a follow because, I don't know, maybe we'll have some surprises there. But if nothing else, let us know what you want to see and hear about in upcoming episodes. And hey, did you know that we also have a Marvel show? That's right. You can also listen to Marvel Stand'em wherever you're listening to this show right now. So check it out. Sometimes we do our Stand'ems live. So make sure you follow Den of Geek on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/Den of Geek TV. This has been DC Stand'em on the Den of Geek Network. Until next time, I'm Mike Cicchini. And remember, folks, we stand together.